Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Born to Talk Radio Show. I'm your host, Marcia Witeka. Conversations plus connections equals community. Those are my three C's. The heart of my show is, what's your story? It's my belief we all have stories. Some are similar, others are uniquely different. Storytelling brings the passions of my guests to life through our conversations. So be prepared to be entertained, informed, and inspired. Welcome to today's show. Well, hello, everybody, on this post-Super Bowl Monday. I hope your team won, but that's not what this show is about today. This show is about my guest, Diane Kane, who's joining me from Phillipstown, Massachusetts, and I want to welcome you to the show today, Diane.
Hi, Marcia.
It's very, very nice to have you joining me today on this episode, and I also want to thank all of the listeners that continue to listen week after week. And this is going to be a really fun show. You and I have spoke once before prior to this radio show, but I just want people to know just a teeny bit, which is you are a publisher, you are an author and founding member of the Coabin Quills Nonprofit Writers Group. You have written children's books. You have written other books. We're going to talk about that background of, oh my gosh, you are so fascinating to me, and I'm just delighted to have you be part of the show with me today. And I thought maybe we could start off by you just sharing a little bit about your background, like where you're from and a little bit about yourself. So take it away, my friend.
Okay, thank you, Marcia. I'm so glad that you asked me to come by and chat with you. I am an author, and I'm pretty proud of that because it took me almost 60 years to get here. So I hope that I can inspire other people that to never give up on their dream. I live in West Central Massachusetts in a really small town called Phillipstown, Mass. I've lived here 40 years. It has a population of 1,700 people. And, you know, a lot of people, most people think of Massachusetts, they think of Boston, but there's just so much more to Massachusetts. And we live about 65 miles from Boston. And we live in an area that's pretty unique because we live around what's called the Coabin Reservoir. And you'll see it's just takes on really a personality of itself in this area. And it had quite an infamous beginning because in 1927, the Metropolitan Water District of Boston decided that Boston needed water and that this valley in West Central Massachusetts was the perfect place to put a reservoir. But in doing that, they had to flood four towns, and they displaced thousands of people, and they even had to rehome many cemeteries in the area. So there's still a little bit of ill will about what happened there because we don't really get the water. But in the generation since then, we hike and we have the fishing in the reservoir, and it's home to just so much wildlife and beauty. Mm. So we've come to really appreciate it, and you'll find it in a lot of the authors' writing around here, and just the settings and the things that people talk about. And I think that it's just a great example of surviving and overcoming, of sacrifice and success. And I think that, you know, speaks a lot to my life as well.
Oh, that's terrific. And before we get into why you write, because that really is going to be part of our story, you have a really interesting background, and maybe this will come up. Are you going to be talking about, because if you are, I'll wait for that, but are you going to be talking about being a postal carrier?
Well, I told you, Marcia, when we were talking, I've worn many hats, and I've kind of fallen into a lot of different jobs at a lot of different times in my life, and I kind of believe in destiny, and things have just worked out the way they're supposed to. And when my children were little, actually, I worked in a restaurant. I did a lot of restaurant work. It's funny because out here in the middle of nowhere, there happens to be this four-star restaurant across the street. We're on a dead-end road, a dirt road, and it's closed now. It's been closed for some years, but it was open for many, many years, and it was really a famous destination, the Fox Run restaurant. And it closed in the winter because it just is like a barn, redone barn, but it's very quaint, and people would come from all over to it. And I started out there actually cleaning the dining rooms. I'd take my young children with me, and they'd run around, and I'd clean the dining rooms. And then I started working in the kitchen, and I worked in salads and desserts. And one of my jobs was to clean up after the chefs. When they left, I would go clean behind there. And then one day, as I was cleaning the grill, I turned around and I got a different perspective of the kitchen, and I saw what the chef sees from where he stands. And I said to myself, someday I'm going to stand here. And that's kind of like the things that happened to me in destiny. And when I left there, as I was assistant to the head chef, and I would do that his job when he was not there. And that's kind of like, there's many things I've failed at in life, but it's not because I haven't tried. And I guess I have dreams beyond what, you know, I'm supposed to have, but I just want to encourage other people that you don't succeed unless you try. Just try anything. But then I went from there. I had worked myself up to assistant to the head chef, and that was a pretty good job. But my children were getting older, and even though my husband is a great father and he took care of them, I worked nights and he worked days, and the kids were well taken care of. We had two daughters. And I was one day said, I really need to get another job where I'm home nights to help them with homework and help my husband. And the mail lady went by. And out here, where they're rural carriers, they drive because there's so much mileage in between each mailbox. They drive, and at that time, they drove their own cars. And I went running out to her, and I said, are they looking for any help at the post office? And she said, they are, because we're such a small town, and there's so many small towns around here. All our mail comes out of a bigger town. And so I went, and I applied, and she gave me a high recommendation because she was my neighbor. And I got into the post office, and my children were about 10 and 12 then, and I just loved it. It was, you know, there's people can love or hate the post office, but I loved delivering the mail. It was, I drove around in these wooded areas where there were just people that I'd be the only one they'd see all day long, and there were a lot of elderly, retired. At that time, I was young. I was still in my 30s, late 30s, so, you know, elderly is what I am now, but senior. But I just loved it, and I made, you know, so many close connections with them, and so I delivered the same route for over 20 years, so I really got to know families and children and growing up, and I got so attached to them, and it's really, I was honored to have that job. I just loved it. But as you get to be 60 years old, and the things, it's a very physical job, and that my body just didn't want to do the same things that it did when I was in my 30s. So luckily, I made it to my 25 years, and I retired, and I was able to take back up my love for writing, because I'd been writing since I was a child, and I never stopped. I really would just write stories and poems all the time and stow them away and do nothing with them. But then when I was retired, I got to, you know, try different things, and I have not stopped.
That's so, you know, when we spoke a month or so ago, whenever it was. I was just so taken by your personal story. I mean, obviously, I live in a big city. I love going to New England. There's no better, beautiful place in the country than New England in the fall. It's just magnificent. Just the leaves, the smell, the just everything about it is so wonderful. But I've never been a writer. I've been a talker. So why? It's a kind of we have a good combination here, my friend. So why do you write? What is it about writing that you love?
I just love putting. I have just a vast imagination. It never stops. It's funny because when I was doing the mail, it was another great thing was writing. You know, so many miles. Stories just came in my head, and I'd come home and write them afterwards. So I just can't not write. It comes from within me, and I have to put the things down on paper. And I think I've always been a avid reader. I love reading all kinds of things, not just one genre, everything, all kinds of authors. And so I think I take from each author something of themselves, and I try to learn lessons and be a better writer. And it's the challenge. It's, again, the challenge. It's like standing there and saying, I'm going to cook. I'm going to be the chef here. And it's just the challenge, and I have to pick it up.
That's so great. And I think that what we're going to learn more as we talk about this is how you just embrace the challenge, which I mean, starting in that restaurant and going forward. So was there someone, when you were maybe a student, someone that encouraged you to write?
I loved school, and I was so lucky to, in high school, find Mrs. Rogers was my English and creative writing teacher. She was probably not much older than me at the time. She was just new out of college, and she was just so full of energy. And she saw something in me, and maybe that I didn't see in myself right then, but she gave me the encouragement way back then, you know, 50 years ago, to really follow my dream and to never forget about my dream. And I still have one of the papers that I wrote for her, a story, and that because I kept it all these years, and it says on the back, A+, you never cease to amaze me. And that to me is like gold.
Wow.
I'll keep it forever. And I've sent her every one of my books, and she always said, you know, I was going to be famous, and I hadn't lived up to that, but I know she's proud of me, and she really did keep my dream alive, and that's how important teachers are. They really are.
Oh, my gosh. Of all subjects, my brother is also a retired teacher, and we remember those teachers that touch us in a positive way. We might remember teachers that might have touched us in a more negative way, but that's okay too. It's all part of the life experience. But teachers really can set a stage for all of us, and that's why it will be so wonderful when at some point these children are back in front of their teachers and not in front of a Zoom call.
I know.
So Mrs. Rogers, it's really funny because there was a Mrs. Rogers that actually taught English at the high school that I went to as well.
Really?
There you go. So where do you I have a feeling I know this information, but maybe you can just tell me, where do you find your inspiration? Where does that come from?
Well, it's funny because a lot of writers talk about writer's block, and I've never experienced that. I just don't know it. I'm always multitasking. I'm always crafting stories in my head. Things just come to me, and I expand on them. I think also that I've always been a character-driven writer. I think that from when I was younger in my reading, I realize now I love the character-driven stories. And so my characters, oftentimes I create them and then they just lead me. And people say that, and I don't think that people really, some people believe it, but my characters talk to me and they tell me exactly where they're going in a story, and sometimes it's not where I think they're going. So, you know, my inspiration comes from everyday things that I see. So many male stories. I fictionalize them, but I have so many great male stories of characters that I've met along the way through the years. And just everyday life just is an inspiration to me.
You know, it's funny. I've been on an author kick for the last several months. I've had a tremendous amount of authors, and it's been really interesting to hear each author's story. And frankly, when you said that you are character-driven and that sometimes the characters then lead the way, I've heard that from others. And I guess what I'd like to know is, in your actual process of writing, because it seems to be the question I like to ask people now, do you start with a journal? Do you go straight to the computer and open up a Word document and start typing? Do you handwrite? How do you actually write?
I love working on the computer. I know a lot of authors, they want to handwrite it, and I have terrible handwriting, for one thing.
I've
never been a good speller. I've really don't spell well, and so I love working on the computer, and I just open it up and blank document, and I just put down a few words, and it goes. If it doesn't go, I try something else, but usually it goes. And I'll give you an example of my characters.
Sure.
And one of my characters that I wrote is a talking gnome, and it ended up that I had to write some stories for one of the books we're going to talk about. And I said, well, I'm going to write about a gnome, and he's going to be he talks, but he's going to be like a crabby, old, cranky guy that really causes trouble. And I tried and tried to write him like that, and he was having none of it. He was just this happy-go-lucky guy would cause trouble, but by accident. He just was good-natured. And it ended up I wrote 6 stories about him because people liked him so much and they still want more of stories about him. So he just really told me what he wanted to do.
How long did it take you to write that book?
The Flash in the Can books, well,
we'll talk. Yeah, you know what? Hang on to that thought. I interrupted you. And so we're going to be talking about Flash in the Can. And so I'm going to pivot away from that and come back to that.
Okay.
So hang on to that thought. But I wanted to ask you this because I think this is really interesting, and I have found this to be something authors like to talk about. And that is, what was the turning point from when you went from writing to becoming an author?
Well, you know, like I said, I've been writing forever. I wrote stories when I was young, and I wrote poetry. But when I was, I think I was about 58, and I fell down at work, and I had to have shoulder surgery, and I was out for 6 months. And somebody at work belonged to a writer's group, and they knew that I loved to write because I was always saying, read this, you know. So I had been asked into the writer's group previously, but since I worked during the day and they met during the day, I didn't go. But now I fell down, and I'm out of work for 6 months. So I said, can I come to the writer's group? And I went, and that was the huge turning point for me because I met other writers, and that's just so important. I think so many times writers are reclusive. I was, and, you know, so scared or anxious to show other people their work, and they never, you know, get any further. But I was so lucky because this group of women were all older women. They had all been published, and they just took me under their wing, and they were determined that I was going to be published. And they, again, saw something that they thought was worthy, where I needed a lot of help. I listened to them and I took their suggestions and their critiques, and I just tried to do better and better. And finally, it was 2016, one of my stories was accepted for publication in Goose River Anthology. And it was, again, a story that was based on my cousin's in-law who had Alzheimer's, but I fictionalized it some, and they paid me. I was just doing the happy dance. So that was the turning point, and I think that to be in a group with other authors and writers who had success and were willing to help me.
That's wonderful. I also like to ask you this, because sometimes people have different definitions, so I'd like to have yours. We've talked about being a writer, and we've talked about being an author. How do you define the two words, or do you think they mean the same thing?
No, that's a great question, Marcia, because, you know, to some people, they are the same, and that's okay. But to me, I always wanted to be an author because I wanted to be paid for my work. And it wasn't a matter, and it's never a matter of the money. To me, it was that I wanted someone to think enough of my work to buy it, to pay for it. And I didn't care what the money is. I get $20 for a story. Sometimes I get a free book for a story. That it's just that somebody thinks that my story is worth something, and that is my definition of an author. And you know, the thing is that since I have been paid for my work, I've gotten to the point where now I don't mind giving away my work. I donate so many of my books to great causes because I feel that worth in me, that I know my work is worth something to people. And that's really was my goal.
Interesting. You know, I don't know what somebody told me they thought the difference was, because I thought this was so fascinating. They said author is short for authoritarian, that you have authenticity, that you're like an expert in something, which I thought, well, that was kind of interesting. But
I
suppose well, you're an expert in what you know. And I do want to mention to people as they're listening that you do have a lovely website, and I happen to love it because it's got this beautiful feather on it, and it's called Write, W-R-I-T-E, like writing, writeofpossibilities.com. And you'll see Diane's face there, and you'll see her blogs, and you'll see all kinds of things there, including the books that we're going to be talking about, because that's really important. But before we get over to your books, because there's just, like I said, we could spend the whole day and not even get to your books, but I do want to talk about what you do with your nonprofit writing, which is Quab and Quills. Can you talk to us a little bit about that nonprofit group that you founded?
Well, I helped found. I was
helped.
One of those
okay.
founding members. Yes. The great thing about writing is connections. And like I said, the writers group was connection. And then when I had my first story published in Goose River Anthology, I was invited to the local library. They have Meet the Local Authors Night once a year. And so I was just on cloud nine. I'm with all these other local authors. There was about 12 of us there. And after that, one of the authors, Steve Piscatello, he got in touch with all of us, all 12 of us, and said, you know, I want to start this nonprofit writers group. And it was his dream to start this group and to publish anthologies with the work of local authors. And he wanted to eventually do scholarships for high school seniors. And I was just like, okay, yeah, I'm on board. Well, there was only four of us actually that answered his call. So as we sat at our first meeting, and we were like, we had no clue what we were doing. If Steve is a teacher, thank goodness he took on all the paperwork of creating the nonprofit, because it was, that was the biggest challenge. That was just endless paperwork of trying to get state and local permission to have. It's crazy. So he did all that, and he wrote for grants too. And we did get a lot of local grants. And but as we sat at the table, the four of us could not have been more perfect, because Steve did the paperwork. We had Emily, who was an illustrator, so she did our covers for all our anthologies. We had Garrett, who is a small self-publisher at that time. He published our books for us. And I really seemingly didn't have much to bring to the table, but as it turns out, connections is my thing. And they said, where are we going to get the stories for these books? We want to, you know, publish a book. And they really weren't as connected as me. They were more of the recluse writers. So I'm like, well, I belong to this writer's group, and I actually belong to another writer's group, and I can, you know, ask them. And so I really got most of the submissions for the first anthology, and I just naturally became the submissions coordinator, and I worked with the authors that were sending them in. I worked with how they set it up. I worked with the other person in our group. We had an editor, a professional editor, so we really had everything we needed right there to really be successful, and we did our first anthology was the first one was Times Reservoir, which they all revolve around the Quabbin Reservoir. There's Voices of the Valley and Mountains of Meditation, and the next one due out very soon is Beyond the Pathway. So they all kind of revolve, the titles all revolve around this area. And it was such a rewarding, it was a challenging job, because I was still working at the time. And so I would come home from work and I would do all this coordinating of all the stories, and just, I was the communications person between all the authors. But it was such a great thing, because I was working with authors, seasoned authors who had been published before, but also a lot of new writers who, this was their first time being published, and it was just so exciting, because I knew how exciting it was for them, having just, you know, gone through it the year before. So I really, really liked it, and I was deeply involved for almost 3 years, and I've step back a little bit because of all the other projects I've taken on personally, that I couldn't do everything. But they just called me lately and said, Diane, do you know any you know, people that want to submit, because they were needed some more submissions for the next book? And I said, sure. And I made a few messages and emails, and I got them 15 more submissions of stories. So it's always, Quabbin Quills will always be close to my heart. And last year they were successful in finally awarding the first in the high school scholarship. So everything that Steve wanted to do has been accomplished and is still going.
Well, that was what I was going to ask you. So not only are you working with adults, but you're also working with high school students as well, right?
Right, right.
Okay.
Yes, and that's very rewarding too, because they're, you know, they're great, they're talented, and it's sort of like being the teacher that encourages them to keep going, and I just love that.
I can see why you would. Teachers really can inspire students, and now with so much, like I said, things are closed down so much, you know, being able to sit and write might just be the outlet that young people are looking for. Some people turn to music, you know. You mentioned poetry. There's so many resources right now, and there's so much technology right now that really helps as well. Do you think that led you to your next writing journey, because I know that we want to talk about these four women and Flash in the Can. Do you think that was sort of the impetus that got you to the next level?
It did. You know, I've been working with Quab and Quills for a couple of years, and even though I wasn't in on specifically publishing the books, I was seeing everything up to that point, formatting the stories to be published. And so I got a real good idea of how books are self-published. And so it was funny because, you know, I was still going to my writer's group. I've never missed in 6 years of my writer's group. I go every month, and I just love those women. And two of them, well, three of them are in closer in my area. They're all in different areas, but three of them I see or talk to more often. Mm-hmm. And one of them is Kathy. And Kathy and I would have coffee at the local country store every once in a while, and we'd talk about writing. And one day she said to me her dream was to have all her short stories published into one book. Now, Kathy has been published. She's been published in many, many magazines and publications. She writes very short fiction, which is called flash fiction, and it's very popular right now because of our lack of attention span, and it's usually under 1,000 words. It can be under 1,500 words, but it's short. Even some of her stories are 500 to 800 words, and they've been in Alfred Hitchcock Magazine and Woman's World, just a lot of big publications. But she, and they're mostly mystery, and she wanted them all in one book. And I just listened to her, and I said, Kathy, we're going to do this. And this is another, you know, my mouth gets ahead of me, and I have no idea how I was going to do that, but we were going to do that, and I was absolutely sure of that. And she thought I was crazy, absolutely crazy. So I said, well, she said, well, because she's very shy, and she's very recluse, and she said, well, I'll put in 10 stories if you put in 10 stories. And then we said, well, we're going to go to the group and ask them if any of them want to get involved. And so Phyllis and Sharon were ready to get on board, and they said, okay, we'll give you 2 stories each. So that was all great. We're going to do this. Well, I don't have 10 stories. They all have got stories. They've published so many. So I had a few, and then I had to write some more. And they actually came pretty easy. My trouble is that I'm very wordy, and I had to keep them. We set it at 1,500 because I couldn't keep my stories under 1,000 words. So I was right up to the limit. I was like switching out words just to keep under that limit. So I wrote the 10 stories. And then in the meantime, I had to research. I had to look at what are the options of self-publishing. There's KDP through Amazon, and that's the one I chose to do those books, because they're not color. They're just text. We had a few photographs in them, but we did them black and white. So KDP I researched and found was a really good option to do that. I had to learn how to format them. The thing is, I'm not scared of computers. My father, we had computers since the 70s. We mm-hmm. had the old Radio Shack computers. So mm-hmm. I'm not scared of computers. And so I'm just a trial and error type of person, and a research, and I just kept Googling, how do I do this? How do I do this? I'd run into a problem. How do I fix that? So, and I'm cheap. I was not going to pay anybody to do the things that I could learn to do. So I formatted it all into book format, and I uploaded the files into KDP. KDP is pretty simple. I really got to say, I think people who can, you know, surf the internet can really learn to do it if you want to. Don't pay people to do these things, and definitely don't pay them thousands. Some people get hooked into those things where, oh, we'll do this all for you for $8,000, and you'll have a book, and we'll give you, you know, so many. It's not necessary. You know, I hired things that I thought that I know are important, and I know that editors are important. Some writers will say, oh, I self-edit, or my friends edit. Well, I belong to a writers group where they're all published authors, and we each go over all of our stories, and they each went over every one of our stories, and we got all of the edits, and I still sent it to an editor and paid an editor, and she still found some errors. And to me, if you're going to do something, do it well. I'm not going to do it second rate. So I paid the editor. Luckily, Kathy's daughter is a graphic designer. She did our cover. It's such an awesome cover. You know, people really go to the website and see my covers there for Flash in the Can 1 and 2. It was funny because Kathy said, I want this book and I want it called Flash in the Can. And Flash was for Flash Fiction, and Can is because they're known as bathroom readers. You keep them on the back of the toilet because they're fast readers. That's what Flash Fiction is known as. So Flash in the Can. So what we did, I said to Cindy that did our cover, I want an outhouse. I want a crescent moon on the outhouse. I want it in the woods, and I want lightning going through the crescent moon. And she did it beautifully. And then she put an old shotgun next to the one tree, and on another tree she hung an orange hunter's vest. And I showed the cover to my husband, and he said, no, not the orange hunting vest. He said, you need the red and black check, the buffalo check, which was not even popular at that time, but it has always been popular with my husband. He's had the coat for 50 years. So I took his coat out of the closet. I took a picture of it. I sent it to Cindy, and she hung it on the tree in the picture on our cover. And then when we did Flash in the Can 2, I said, two outhouses to, you know, with the lightning going through, and they were just awesome. And we had so much fun with that book. That book came out in 2018. We did events everywhere, bookstores, libraries. When we dressed up in our buffalo plaid, which by then was so popular, we could get capes and hats and everything you could think of in buffalo plaid, and we wore crazy hats, and we would just tell everybody about writing and encourage them. It wasn't all about our book. It was encouraging people that we did this and you can do it too. And people, we had big crowds. And one of the things that we end up doing, we were at Barnes & Noble, and that was for me a dream come true, to be in Barnes & Noble signing my book, you know.
No,
so
kidding.
We just had a ball with it. And then we did the second one, and it came out in February of 2020, and all of our events got canceled.
Oh.
But, you know, it's still just, I wouldn't go, I loved it. We loved every minute of it. It was just so much fun.
You know, I was thinking about picturing you. I do something with a group of three other women too, so we women really count on each other. Did you have a name? Did you name your group? The four of you. Did you call yourselves a group of? Did you have a name for it?
We are Flash in the Can. We are Flash in the Can.
Flash in the Can is the name of your group.
It's so funny. It's the name of the book, but we will go places and people will recognize us. And oh, you guys are Flash in the Can, and so it just stuck, and that's what we are. And it's you know, we did photo shoots where we would find old outhouses, and we took pictures of them. And then when the last one came out, it was winter, and I have pictures of us shoveling to the outhouse, and it was just crazy fun. You know, one
that
of
is
the
crazy
Phyllis
fun.
In our group, yeah, Phyllis in our group, she's 82, and you know, Sharon's, I think, I better not overestimate, but I think she's near 70, and so is Kathy, and I'm in my mid-60s, and it was just a ball.
sounds like it. You know, when you have a group of people that you do things with that you enjoy, there's no stopping you. I mean, that's what's so great. And I think so just so I'm clear about this. So a flash fiction is an actual description. That is a
yes.
known word, and it's for words under 1,000 or under 1,500.
People say writers will say it's under 1,000, but I did Google it, and you can push it to under 1,500 with what I did. I pushed it. But, you know, there's okay. so many different kinds now. There's microfiction. I think that's, you know, each one has something. I think that's under 100-word story. And so it's, you know, with all the, like, the Instagram, the tweet, and all this stuff, these things are... They're really widely read, and the flash fiction's been around for quite a while, though, because most of the publications want that kind of fast and fun story that just ends with a punch, you know?
Good. I wanted to ask you one other clarification, because all of this is new to me. I'm not a writer. I'm a talker. You did talk about this self-publishing, and did you say K like kite, D like dog, P like Paul, KDP?
Yes, KDP. And it's Kindle Direct Publishing, and it's not.
I see. That's what it stands for.
It means
Kindle Direct.
Kindle,
okay.
But it doesn't. They publish print books. Print books. It's how you publish print books and ebooks, but it's how you publish print books through Amazon. But, you know, if I can just give some advice to people that are looking to self-publish, it's tricky. You have to do your homework and look into it. And like I said, don't get caught up in there's vanity press that'll say, I'll take your manuscript and I'll make it into a book, and, you know, all you have to do is pay me. And they want a lot of money, and you don't need to pay that. I'm not saying that they're scamming people. They're giving people a product. Some of them are better than others, but you don't need to pay that. Like I said, I paid for my editor. I paid for the cover. I wanted to pay her for that cover, even though she was Kathy's daughter. I wasn't going to take that for anything, but for nothing. But I did my formatting. Some people can't do that. Some people are not good enough or don't feel confident enough on the computer to do that. But if you pay somebody to format, it's not thousands of dollars. And then, you know, the thing that you need are an ISBN number, and those cost about $100. Or you can get them free from Amazon if you don't really want to be expanded into libraries or other bookstores or things like that. But
it is through Amazon, though, which I think is interesting.
It's through Amazon, and that's the thing. You know, a lot of the small bookstores, this is what I learned as I went on, and I was selling my book at different, you know, trying to sell our book at different bookstores. And when I came to Barnes & Noble, and it was like, oh, no, you don't say that A word in Barnes & Noble. Never go into Barnes & Noble and say that A word. So, I said, okay, well, how do I get my book in here? And they said, you have to, you know, publish it through Barnes & Noble, which is another publishing. It's a publishing, self-publishing procedure, and I did it. And it was, you know, not a lot different than the files that I had to upload to Amazon. I uploaded them to Barnes & Noble Press. And that... when they had to make a couple of different, they didn't recognize some things in my files, and I had to make a couple of adjustments, but it wasn't hard at all. And then I'm in Barnes & Noble, and they said, okay, fine. You know, now you can have, you know, an event here. But what I've learned since then, there's this other self-publishing company called Ingram Sparks. Now, how I learned about Ingris Fox is because then my next step was to go into illustrated books. And Amazon, they do illustrated softcover, but they don't do illustrated hardcover. And I knew I wanted my books in hardcover.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to learn Ingris Fox, which is a little more difficult, but still doable. And illustration is a little more difficult, but still doable.
Well,
but if you're going to hire somebody, you don't have to pay thousands of dollars to do it.
Look at the time. We haven't even gotten to your book. We need to talk about your book. Let's spend this. No. It's never too much. It's never too much for me. But I want to make sure, you know, I have promoted you about how this fabulous book is about Gatto. So let's talk about Don Gatto, and let's share the story, because there's a story there about this three-legged cat from Saborga.
I love this story, because it's one of the positive social media stories. It's I'm on Facebook. I've been on Facebook for years, and I happened to see a girl on Facebook that I knew way back 40 years ago, and I didn't know whatever became of her, and I saw her on Facebook, and she was in Paris, and she was an artist, which I knew even back then she loved to do art, and she was an accomplished artist in Paris. She had her own studio, and I was just so excited for her. So I became friends with her on Facebook, and I followed all of her ventures, and I just loved it. And she moved from Paris. She still has her studio in Paris. She moved to Saborga, Italy. Well, in Saborga, Italy, she befriended a little cat, and the cat was a stray cat, wild cat, and then it came, it would come and go, and it had an unfortunate accident, and she helped it, and she brought it to the local vet, Dr. Alfonso, and he said the cat will be fine, but it will have three legs instead of four. And so, you know, she took the cat home, and she would post pictures of the cat all the time. Don Gatto, she named him Don Gatto. Some people think it's Gatto, G-A-T-O, which is cat in Spanish, but she actually named Gatto after French, after pastry and cream, because he's orange and cream color. So that's how she named him. And he got better, and he ran, and he climbed trees, and she'd put pictures of him up there. And one day, nowhere, I said, Linda, can I try to write a children's book about Don Gatto? And she said, please do. And I was like, I said, oh my gosh, what did I just do? I don't even have read a children's book. I always wanted to write one, and I actually did have one in the works, but I'd never published one. So I said, okay, I have to write this book about Don Gatto. And he was, he's a larger than life character, because he would go on the train with her to Italy, from Italy to Paris, to her studio there. And mm-hmm. everybody, Saborga, Italy is just small village in the hills above the Mediterranean Sea, and overlooks the Mediterranean Sea. It's just mm-hmm. gorgeous. And everybody knows Don Gatto. So I have to write this story. And it came to me, it kept coming to me in rhyme. And it's very hard to write a rhyming book, but I kept trying not to, and he kept coming back in rhyme. And so several months after that, I had taken a writing vacation with one of my friends from the group, and we went to this small little island off of Maine, and she didn't really know she was going to hear Don Gatto over and over again, and I kept trying with Don Gatto as the three-legged cat. And she, one day from the bathroom, while she's brushing her teeth, she yells at me, let Don Gatto tell the story. And I said, oh my gosh. And it just came. I am Don Gatto. I'm the three-legged cat of Saborga. And from there, it was just, he wrote the whole story, and it's just so fun, because he's the savvy cat. I'm the savvy cat of Saborga, and I'm the curious cat. And then he's the feral cat. And when it comes time for, he has the accident, and the artist runs to help him, and he's not used to needing help, but he lets her help him, and he recovers, and then he knows he doesn't need to stay there anymore. He can be the free cat again, but there's something in her eyes he sees. He knows the artist needed him. So he mm-hmm. stays where he has a name and a home. And so I finished the story, and I sent it to Linda, and she loved it, and she went to draw the pictures, and she is, if you go lindamccluskey.com or Linda McCluskey Art, her pictures, she does landscapes of Paris and buildings in Italy, of the old beautiful buildings, and they sway like they're dancing, like they're like you're in a dream, and they're just beautiful. And that was the art that she brought to Don Gâteau. And so then I had to figure out how to publish an illustrated book, which was then we were getting into the pandemic and the shutdowns, and things were not easy to publish at that point. And I think everything went wrong that could possibly go wrong, but we did end up publishing it in hardcover, softcover, in English, French, Italian, and Spanish.
Wow! So when did it release?
It released in April, but we had to call back on it because the colors were not right, and really we're never going to know whether some of it was our fault and some of it was just the pandemic, and that things were, ink was in short supply, papers were in short supply, people to print were in short supply. It was really chaos, and the time of shipping the books was just prolonged, it was months. And so in actuality, I'd say July of last year, everything really started finally going smoothly, because we're talking, Linda is over in Italy and I'm here in Massachusetts, and she's sending me files and I'm trying to, format those files. And then I would order books and I'd have them sent to Italy, and and some of the ones that were coming to me were coming out fine and printed in the United States. And after a while, those weren't coming fine either. But for a while, all the books she was getting were not fine. And every day I'd say, did you get the book? Yeah, it's not good. And so finally, one day she said, yes, it's good. And I was like, oh, thank you. Because we worked so hard. We worked so hard on it. And I just wrote the second Don Gâteau and sent it to her. It's Don Gâteau and His Uniquely Perfect Friends, and it talks about all the different animals, dogs, cats that around Seborga in his little village, that one's a little shy and one can't hear so well, and one is limping along because he's old and gray. And so it's a nice story. Linda loves it, and she's working on the pictures for that now.
That is so great. And, I think it's really important. I don't want to lose time without mentioning this. How can, if people are listening going, I want to purchase this book. I want to read these books. I want to read these anthologies. Is there a way you would best direct them to do that?
Well, Amazon it's easy. It's there. And it gets our books out.
Good.
As much as some people, don't like it, Amazon is the way to go and get it the fastest, the quickest. But if you don't want to do that, and this is another great way, just go to your local bookstore, your local library, ask them to order my books. And they can order them because I've been published through Ingram Sparks, which is another thing of now. Instead of just publishing through Amazon, I publish through Ingram Sparks, which covers everything, and anybody, any store, any library can order my books.
And is that Ingram or England?
I-N-G-R-A-M, Ingram.
Oh, Ingram.
Sparks.
Okay. Okay. Terrific.
Yep.
So I'll do.
Yep.
I'll do
that's
that.
That's my Massachusetts accent.
You can't. Hey, listen. It's okay with me. You know, as you were talking about Linda and the cat, what occurred to me, what I heard, tell me if I've got this right. It sounds like it was a mutual rescue. It sounds like they rescued one another.
Yes. Yes. And
that's lovely.
It is, because I think that's how it goes a lot with animals.
Mm-hmm.
It's that we think we're rescuing them, but they give us so much comfort and company. So he's the light of her life, and he's just such a great cat. He like I said, he runs, he climbs trees, he's got great personality, and he has his own Facebook page. So if you want to see Don Gateau, the three-legged cat, you can follow him on Facebook and see all kinds of pictures of him in his garden in Italy. And
that's
funny,
so cool.
I've never met him. You know, maybe if it hadn't been for the lockdown, it would have been different. But, you know,
mm-hmm.
I've never been there. I've never met him, but I feel very close to him. And one time we did a Zoom, her and I was on another radio show, and she was there at the TV station, and she was there at the same time on the Zoom. So I got to see Don Gateau live in his garden.
I'm going to spell Gateau just for those that don't. It's all on your page, so everyone that's listening, it's easy to find. But Don is the D-O-N, and Gateau is G-A-T-E-A-U. And I didn't know he had a Facebook page, so I'm going to have to go check that guy out. So I guess what I want to say, in closing, first of all, do you have another book coming out? Because I guess we really should know that. Do you have another book that's on the way?
I do, and this one has been in the works for almost 10 years, and
wow.
I never really thought that it would get published, but Braden the Brave is a true story of my cousin's daughter, whose baby was born with medical issues, and he needed a major operation right after birth, and it was really heartbreaking to see the parents, first-time parents, struggling with this, because they knew before he was born that this was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's not a lot you can do to help, but as a writer, that's how I always think, is in words. And so I wrote a book, Braden the Brave, for this little baby, for his parents, that Braden was just a little scared. But
mm-hmm.
with the love and support of his family and friends, Braden is brave. And it goes like that. And it gave them just a support and another comfort. I did it with photos of Braden, and I did it, for crazy prices on Snapfish, because they make the books. And I thought that would be all there was to it. Well, they brought it to Massachusetts Children's Hospital, and the doctors and nurses there just loved the story, and they actually asked for two copies to keep there in the waiting rooms for the other parents. And, you know, I always wanted to get it illustrated and really published, and I did send it to a couple of traditional publishers who said, no, they turned it down. They said it's too personal. And I did then think about that, and I made it more universal to encompass more children who might be going, and families that might be going through this. And I still didn't think I could afford an illustrator, but another twist of fate, I met a young girl, Siri Patton, and she's local, and I just loved her work. She had never illustrated a book, but she drew she did a lot of art. I saw her at a craft fair where I was selling Flash in the Can, and I said, Siri, would you want to, you know, do illustrations for Braden the Brave? And she was excited, and she was so thrilled, and so she's She did finish the illustrations, and then I had some updates for her, so I'm getting the illustrations on Wednesday. And
wow.
So within a month or two, Braden the Brave will be out, and I'm pretty excited about that because I really want every children's hospital to have a book, and I will, you know, make sure that they all have free copies. I just, that's my goal with Braden the Brave.
I love that. That's so generous. I actually had a guest on my show probably 5 years ago that was the librarian in the Children's Hospital here in Los Angeles. And what those
wow.
books mean to children and the fact that they had to be their own and the sanitation of keeping, you know, the germs
yeah.
and the siblings coming in. And
right.
I mean, this just speaks to you, Diane, as a human, about your generosity and your heart, because I just, like I said, when we first, I don't even remember how it is we met. I forget sometimes how you and I get connected, but it was, my sense it was probably on social media. But
it was, yeah.
It was, but I would just say that this has been such an honor. I love what I do as well. I must tell you, I am so grateful and I am so thankful that I have listeners from all over the country, world, really, there's no end,
yep.
That listen to these, what I call stories, these connections
yep.
that you talked about. Of course that talks to my heart. That's me. Conversations
yep.
plus connections equals community. Those could be your words. You know, you
yes.
understand what that means. And
it is.
And I just love
so
it.
So many people. I've just connected. And, you know, the thing is with the pandemic and that and all the bad things about it, the good things is that I've found different ways to connect, and I've connected with so many people, like you said, all over the world. And there's a connection. There's a thread that just flows through, and you find it, and it's just beautiful.
It is. And, you know, depending upon everyone's lifestyle, if they live alone, if they're somewhat isolated, you know, or weather holds you in, what Zoom has done today, for me to be able to
yeah.
look and speak with my son and my daughter-in-law in Tucson and
yeah.
my family in Michigan, and to look into their eyes and see them. We can't travel. And, you know, gosh,
right.
trust me, you are on my travel destination location when we can do this.
Oh,
I have
yeah.
so many
yeah.
friends, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino, people that live in Maine in this area, because I think
yeah.
I've connected you with Elizabeth, have I not?
Eileen Dolan.
That's
Dolan,
right, Eileen Dolan.
Yes.
Dolan, I'm sorry.
We have so much in common, and we're not that far away, and we are going to meet up someday when things are better. And it's just another connection, and they just go on and on.
They do, and I just think it's beautiful. And you're right, it's Eileen. She, I believe she connected the two of us. So I'm grateful.
Right.
And you know, I think that if
I am too.
At the end of each day or at the beginning of each day or in the middle of each day, if we can just pause, I mean, it can make me very emotional to
yeah.
just pause and recognize what we are grateful for. There are people suffering. I'm not going to
yeah.
deny that.
I
am not going to deny that, because we all know people that are struggling right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I wake up in the morning and I feel grateful. I look at the sky, I feel grateful. I look at the moon at night, I feel grateful. You know, I am. And this opportunity of speaking to just talented, giving human beings, as my friend would say, week after week, doing what you love. I mean, what could be
yeah.
better? I mean, what could be better? So thank you. I look forward. I have a lot
thank
of repeat
you.
Guests, because I'll tell you, the story goes on. Your story goes on. And I think that what you're doing to encourage high school kids, what you're doing in your community, how you delivered your mail for 25 years. I mean, you've lived a really blessed life, Diane. And I want to thank you for blessing my life as well and joining me today. This has just been phenomenal.
thank you, Marcia, for this opportunity to really, I hope, speak to other people who have dreams and they think that they've lost their opportunity. You never do. You can always, always pursue your dreams.
I agree. All right, everybody. Well, believe it or not, I do have an author again next week that will be joining me, so you'll have to tune in to listen to my story with Catherine Sherlock. And I want to say goodbye for now, everybody. Have a safe and well week, and I'll see you next week. Bye for now.